in, folks. How you doing? I'm your host, Nick LaPenna. This is The Crunch, 7:01 Eastern Time, 4:01 Pacific, and something 01 everywhere else around the world. Now, I have a really packed schedule today. I'm going to be honest. There is a lot that has been happening, both in the NBA circuit, in the NHL as well, and the NFL Combine, let's not forget. So we have a lot to talk about. Oh, and there's some news out of golf as well that I will touch on in a second. What I'm going to do in a couple minutes is bring on analyst Cam Reeves. We're going to talk about the recent controversy with Dwayne Casey and the Raptors. Raptors, by the way, fell yesterday in overtime to the Detroit Pistons. Dwayne Casey, obviously, the former head coach of the Raptors. So I'm going to bring him on to talk about that before inviting on Evan Pretto as well. We're going to talk about the Leafs and specifically the injury bug. It's catching and it's catching badly. Two of the top four defensemen on the Leafs, Gardner and Dermott, both down. We'll have to see how it impacts them. They're in the midst of a West Coast road swing, and they also won big time last night by a score of 6-2. Ennis, in his return from being scratched for Nick Pétain, a hat trick. We will also touch on the impact of the fourth liners. They have a ton of small, speedy fourth liners now, and someone will not be able to make it into the lineup. So we'll break that down and so much more right after this commercial break. This is The Crunch on the Radio Laurier Network. And we are back on The Crunch, folks. How you doing? 7:06 Eastern, 4:06 Pacific, and something 06 everywhere else in the world. I'm joined now by analyst Cam Reeves. Cam, how you doing?
Not bad, Nick. How's it going?
We're doing well over here in Waterloo. Now, the Raptors were in Detroit on the weekend to take on the Pistons. They lost in overtime. But the real thing that's been taking over the headlines is Dwayne Casey. He was asked about the Raptors and how their season has went. Obviously, the former coach. He said a couple of interesting things. How about you break it down and give me what your opinion is of Dwayne Casey on the Raptors?
Well, to start off, Nick, I just have to address the quote, which he just mentioned how he walks into the locker room every day in Detroit, and he notices that there's three championship trophies on the wall, whereas when you walk into Toronto, there isn't. And he also mentioned that there was the fans in Detroit know what a championship feels like, and they know what it's all about, which just to start off with is extremely disrespectful and just in my opinion, spitting in the fans' face to begin with. And just to touch on this overall, because he has done things in the past that has led him to show how salty and just how he feels that he was totally wrong. Early on in the season when he made his original return to Toronto, he actually decided to have his Detroit Pistons team go a different way out of the locker room in protest at that he didn't want to associate himself with the Raptors, and also to make a stand just completely against the organization, and just to show on top how he was totally undeservedly fired. And after that win, I think everyone remembers it was the last second shot for Detroit to win. He was jumping all over the court, swinging his fist in the air like he won the championship, which to me just seems absolutely ridiculous. And you know, now just to relate it back to this quote, I just think how completely unfair it is to really spit in the fans' face. You know what I mean? It's one thing to be mad at Masai Ujiri about in your opinion, undeservingly firing you, but to spit in the fans' face about saying how we've never tasted a championship and we don't know what it's all about is completely ridiculous, selfish, and childish, in my opinion. To be honest, he had his chances here. He was here for 7-8 years. He made the playoffs and had great regular seasons. But the fact of the matter is, he never got it done in the playoffs. We've had great teams where, we just don't show up in the playoffs under his coaching. We lost to the Washington Wizards in a sweep, and that should have been a very close series a few years ago. Just recently, we've lost to the Cavaliers, back-to-back sweeps in the second round. Especially last year when we were the first seed. And that Cavaliers team, no disrespect, they had LeBron James, but they had a bunch of scrubs on that team aside from him. That should not have been a sweep under any circumstances. And he also failed to make many adjustments and ever create a true offense in the city. I remember a few years ago, he would only really use Lou Williams in isolation. That was his plan every time. And you know what? I just completely disagree with his coaching style. And he made mistakes on that front. And just to finish things off, he had his chance here. And even if he was a little more successful, the fact of the matter is even if this team was successful, it was time for a change. In my opinion, Masai Ujiri made the right call, and after two back-to-back sweeps in the second round, this team needed a new voice and new personnel. And so, in my opinion, he was fairly fired, and he's been taking this extremely childish.
Cam, I 100% agree with you on all fronts, and I'm going to take it one step further, because you're right, he's been acting childish. The one problem I really have is his quote near the end. And what that focused on, here, I'll read an excerpt, okay? Dwayne Casey said that there is a certain aura of walking in to a championship-level franchise, as is in Detroit. He also mentioned that Toronto didn't have that same aura because they had not won a championship in the past. Dwayne, I need to address something with you. You were not part, or you were not even close to being part of the Detroit Pistons championships. You just weren't. Don't walk around and talk about how some franchises differ from the others when the fact of the matter is you're sitting in seventh place and the Raptors are a championship contender right now. He was not also the only casualty of those failed playoff losses, as you mentioned. DeMar DeRozan was traded after what some could say was a subpar performance in the playoffs. If you look at this team right now, over half of it is new guys when you're looking at last year, right? You look at Kawhi Leonard, of course, Danny Green, also brought over in that same trade, Jeremy Lin, free agent signing, Marc Gasol, brought in via trade. Patrick McCaw, brought in from the buyout free agency market, right? Amongst other guys, you know, you got Jody Meeks and Boucher has been a product, but he hasn't really played much. My point is, Masai, you are not the only person who has been held responsible for those unbelievable collapses, two straight sweeps by the same team, and a loss the year prior. We've been beaten by the Cavaliers. Not once, not twice, but three times. A change had to be made. And let me tell you something. Masai Ujiri made a big change, or big changes, because this whole roster is revamped. Okay? It was tough to see guys like DeMar and JV and others go. But it had to be done, because you don't play basketball to lose. And look, I was never a huge Casey fan. Some of my diehard fans who have listened to the show from last year know. I was never sold on Casey, okay? Good defensive coach. Childish offensive play schemes, mind you. I played high school ball. We won the Toronto District School Board Championship. And our plays were similar to some of the Raptors. I mean, some of those ISO plays with DeMar DeRozan. You give DeMar the ball in the high post.
Nick, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I would almost put Mr. Babugios in the same sentence as Dwayne Casey.
Oh, don't get me started. Let me give a shout-out to Mr. Babugios and Miss Burrows, coaches of our winning team, TDSB champs. And, you know, I like their style. They really played a short bench. We played six guys in the finals. I took a three-minute break, and the backup center came in, and I was out there the whole time. But that's neither here nor there. Back to Dwayne Casey, okay? A change had to be made. He's not accepting it like a true professional that, frankly, I thought he would be. Look, I'm not a huge fan of him. I've mentioned that. But I thought he would handle it like a professional. But the fact that we have to bring up, you know, his behavior after meetings with the Raptors is preposterous, to say the least. And this isn't the first time. Back in the fall, Casey made some subliminal remarks. And so, at the end of the day, it's disheartening to see, but I think it really shows, Cam, where the Raptors are going. It really shows that the Raptors have a true chance of success and someone is bitter about it. Because whatever sport or situation you're in, the best is never needs to pump their chest. And the Raptors are executing. Kawhi Leonard is executing. The Raptors have a plan. Nick Nurse has been tremendous, I think, really bringing out the best in Pascal Siakam and revitalizing the offense a bit. But it's really sour grapes from Dwayne Casey, and it's a shame. Do you want to touch on anything here before we go to break?
No, just that I completely echo your statements and agree. Yeah, complete sour grapes in the end, and it's really too bad because, you know, I did have respect for him before, but it's lessening as time goes on with this man.
Boy, time does not age well for everything. Usually it does, but not everything, and not Dwayne Casey in this case. Okay, folks, stick around right after the break. I'm going to bring in Evan Preto to join the conversation, and we'll break down the Leafs' recent injury bug, how they'll combat this, as well as some of the fourth-line roster spots here after the trade with Nick Pettan. Folks, stick around. This is The Crunch on the Radio Laurier Network. And we are back on The Crunch, folks. How you doing? 7:20 Eastern, 4:20 Pacific, something 20 around the world. I'm joined here by Evan Preto and Cam Reeves. Guys, how you doing?
Pretty good, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so...
Great.
Thanks. We got some huge news coming up. Both Gardner and Dermott injured. Looking like at least until the end of the month, if not longer. The Leafs defense core, we've debated this in the past. It's weak to start with, and now you're missing two of the top four guys. Evan, break down what this means. How vulnerable are the Leafs right now? And who do you think will perform admirably as the replacements?
You know, it's a very tough situation. You know, they've got some good depth options on the blue line. Ideally, you don't want to see Martin Marincin in there, but... you know, you do with what you can. Unfortunately, some of the depth options that we speak of, they're currently with the Marlies and they're injured. That's Andreas Borgman and Calle Rosen. But, you know, looking at Gardner and Dermott, those are two guys. They don't play top 4 minutes for us, both of them, like Dermott doesn't. But I'd consider them two of our best four defensemen. I don't care how Babcock deploys them. That's just the case. And it's you know, going into the playoffs, if we don't have them back, it'll be a tough go.
I'm with you 100%. Cam, can I get you to touch in on this?
Yeah, for sure, man. Just to start off, with two huge losses, in my opinion, of the D-Core. Losing Dermott and Gardner, who are just key members of this core, just, like, makes us a little more depleted, you know, honestly. I'm looking at the lineup here, and it's just, If you go through lines 1, 2, 3, it's not that impressive, especially if we're just trying to play consistent hockey here and be a top 5 team in this league. It's just, I don't think it's going to get the job done.
I'm with both you guys 100%. A lot of things scare me, but having Ron Hainsey, having Igor Ozhiganov, and having Martin Marincin as three of your six defensemen on any given night, it terrifies me to death, okay? And this is a problem. The other problem I actually see here in this situation is that if you look down in the Marlies for some of the, you know, the good prospects that you could think about bringing up, a lot of injuries there too. Rosen was hurt recently. Sandin is just getting back from injury now, if you wanted to think about bringing him up. And Liljegren has also had some injury issues this year as well. So... I mean, those are probably your top three or top four defensemen you'd think about bringing up in case of injury, and they've all had difficulties this year. So, again, it's hard to see Zaitsev being basically your second or third best defenseman now after Riley and Muzzin. So that really scares me heading on to this road swing, to say the least, because, again, you're playing long minutes, long flights. Usually teams are rested when they're at home, and you're flying around, so we'll have to see. I mean, you got Vancouver coming up as well on the docket. Obviously, the Leafs played really well last night. Ennis, three goals there. So I want to ask you guys here, who's the odd man out on that fourth line? Because Nick Petan was just brought in via trade, okay, for Par Lindholm. Scores in his first game. Then he's scratched the next night. Ennis is brought back after being scratched. Scores a hat trick last night. And then you still got Trevor Moore, who's playing impact hockey without really scoring here. He's had a couple apples. Evan, I'll start with you. Who's the odd one out of these small, miniature, speedy fourth liners?
You know, it's pretty funny, dating back to the Joshua Lavo days. Seeing that any time he'd put the puck in the net playing on the fourth line, he'd be sitting in the press box next game. So I don't know if scoring is what Babcock wants from these guys. But all kidding aside, an interesting note from practice today. We had Tyler Ennis slotted in at left wing, Nick Petan at center, with Trevor Moore on the right wing. So Gauthier slotted out, and Nick Petan was back in. And that fourth line right there is three players who are all 5'9". So it's a Kyle Dubas, Sault Ste. Marie, retro Greyhound line that is all about skill. And you know what? I'm all for it. It's the regular season. Why not give it a shot? You know, Dubas said after the deadline that he hasn't seen it up to this point, but he'd like Mike Babcock to experiment with the lineup for the remainder of the regular season, and I think we're gonna have a chance to see what Kyle Dubas envisions as his ideal fourth line. Because I know Babcock certainly doesn't want Frederick Gauthier out of the lineup, because you know he's 6'5" every shift. But hey, you know what? I'm all for giving it a chance.
Yeah, Cam, you want to touch in on that? That's an interesting point. They're gonna try experimenting and put Gauthier in the press box for a bit. What do you think?
Yeah, I completely echo Preto's statement. I think we definitely need to see what we got here with Nick Petan. I think Gauthier has played the majority of the season, so we know what he brings. And, you know, Ennis is hot recently, as you said, with the hat trick. And, you know, Trevor Moore has really impressed me this year. So I like him still in the lineup. And yeah, I'm very interested to see what Nick Petan brings at center on that line. And let's go. Yeah, and I definitely agree with Dubas trying this out, experimenting for this playoff run. But as you mentioned, I don't know how much longer this, or even if this is a possibility as a trio, just based off Babcock's love for the GOAT at the center position there.
Yeah, you know what, I actually, it's funny, I agree with both you guys to an extent. I kind of like the idea of taking Gauthier out of the lineup, just because he's not what I would call the most talented hockey player, and you'd have a third line with those guys who are speedy and definitely more talent, with folks like Ennis and Moore in his small sample size. But it's tough because Gauthier is a huge body. He doesn't really get pushed around all that much. He doesn't lay the body excessively, but he is a presence. He will brush you, unlike some players on the Leafs. Even Matthews is a big body. He won't really lay a hit ever. So it's kind of nice to see that one of the 12 forwards will actually finish a check when not many of them do. Again, he's pretty slow. He's not very adept. But I would leave him in the lineup. I would leave him in the lineup. I'd probably go with a platoon role, and whoever's really playing well, stay out there. It's kind of hard when all of them are scoring to really play a platoon. I mean, how the heck can you take out Ennis after a hat trick? I guess you just take out Moore, who also played well in the Calgary game, and let Petan in there. So it's hard. But at the end of the day, you guys are both right on the experimenting issue, right? It's the regular season. The Leafs are basically locked in either second or third. Doubtful that they drop to fourth, but nonetheless, playoff spot is basically secured. We traded for Nick Petan. He's here for a reason. So, again, I don't know why you wouldn't try it out for a few games, but long run, playoff, Leafs, I really hope that Gauthier is in the lineup. I'm not a huge fan, but again, he's bringing something that the Leafs miss, and sometimes it's all about having the right fit. Last question here. I want to bring you guys up to speed on Brad Marchand. He was tweeting out that Mitch Marner deserves $12 million per year on a new deal. What do you think Marchand's intent is? Is he just stirring the pot? Is it just a little bit of fun and giving some props to Marner's play and how much he should get paid?
Well, there could be a couple of intentions there from Marchand. You know, I certainly think he. I remember a couple years ago he had something. He mentioned Austin Matthews in a tweet, something like, "Man, you guys should only play him out. Like, you guys shouldn't be allowed to play him out there. It should be 1 versus 5. This is not fair." It's kind of. I think he's trying to get under the skin of Marner a bit, maybe try to throw him off his game. Because, you know, that's what he does on the ice. But if not, maybe, you know, hey, why not drive the price up on the Maple Leafs so that they can't afford to keep him?
I hear you. Cam, you want to touch on that?
Oh, my God, yeah. I saw this today, and I just, you know what? It did not surprise me one bit. This is just typical Brad Marchand, a.k.a. the rat of the National Hockey League. Just stirring the pot and just trying to create some type of narrative. You can definitely tell this is just the whole play and like obviously it won't work, but it's just stirring the pot with Maple Leaf fans saying, oh, this guy, he wants to drive up the price so we can't keep him. It's just total rat business from the usual suspect.
You know what, I find it a little funny, but I'm with you guys. Marchand's sticking his nose where it doesn't belong, and at the end of the day, I don't think it'll be even close to a $12 million a year deal for Marner. But, I mean, Marchand's doing his thing, right? It's the least we could expect. The Leafs look like they're going to play Boston in the playoffs, the way the standings has been set up. So, again, Marchand trying to get a jump on the gun here and start a little bit of bad blood and a little bit of toying with the Leafs wouldn't surprise me one bit. I'll keep it 100% honest. But it'll be an interesting narrative to see, because when the Leafs play in the playoffs and likely will face the Bruins, we're going to see a lot more bad blood. And Marchand, if he's trying to stir the pot and stick his nose where it doesn't belong and maybe tempt Marner a little bit, he's got the talent to burn them. So we'll see what comes of this, but definitely an interesting little storyline to touch on the end of the segment. Guys, thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. We got to have you back in due course.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, great. Love being on, Nick.
All right, folks, stick around right after this commercial break. We'll be back with NFL Combine results and news on Tiger Woods before the upcoming Arnold Palmer Invitational. Stick around. This is The Crunch on the Radio Laurier Network. And we are back on The Crunch. Folks, how you doing? We had the NFL Combine on the weekend. And let me tell you, there's some interesting takeaways here that I took, obviously, from the Combine itself. Some interesting 40-yard dashes among some other of the metrics that they compete there at the Combine. My first big takeaway from this draft class of 2019 was that the defensive talent is the real deal. Obviously, we knew there was a couple big names here coming in. Nick Bosa out of Ohio State, along with Brian Burns in Florida State, and Montez Sweat from Mississippi State, all looked pretty good. But it was really impressive. Sweat, meanwhile, set the record for D linemen at the 40-yard dash this combine. Look, these guys are the real deal, and I think that, yeah, it's a bit far-fetched to take a defensive talent in the top three pick, just because at the end of the day, quarterback is the position that really sets the tone in the game. I mean, some of these guys are good. Josh Allen, edge rusher, boy, he's 6'5", 262, and he ran 40 yards at 4.64. I mean, that's just tremendously impressive. These are big bodies, and they can move, okay? Bosa was also pretty good. Obviously, he's had some injury problems, but he looked pretty sharp at the combine. 6'3", 300-plus pound prospect there, running the 483. And Quinton Williams out of Alabama, he looked good too. I mean, at the end of the day, you'll probably see a lot of these guys go in the top half of the draft or maybe first round, but the defensive talent is there. And for a team that's maybe looking to just add a piece or two to contend, yeah, your pick near the end of the first round won't be bad. There are some pretty good playmakers on the defensive side, and it's a feast. I mean, based on projections, we're seeing at least 20 guys that will be chosen in the first round that are on the defensive end, which is unheard of. Another one of my takeaways, obviously, all eyes on Kyler Murray, no doubt about it. And he measured 5'10 and 1/8, surprisingly. 207 pounds as well. He looked a little thicker than back in his days at Oklahoma. But, I mean, 5'10's not as bad as people thought. There was people thrown around a 5'7, 5'8, 5'9 type of frame with Kyler Murray. And that's one of the concerns, right, that he's a small guy. So it was nice to see him measuring in there well and then performing admirably in the combine. I think at the end of the day, Kyler Murray is definitely a top prospect, to say the least. I said earlier in the year, you got to go with your heart. And if your heart's telling you that you want to be a star, you want to make money, you want to make a lot of money right now, you go football, okay? The only way you'd really go baseball is if you loved baseball over it. There's not many intangibles that baseball is better for. It's more boring. You're not a star. You know, you can really get stuck on duds in terms of teams, and it's really hard to make moves at the deadline. So a lot of those contracts are long-term and you know, hard to move. You can't skip the line. You'll be in the A leagues and the Double A leagues for usually 2 to 3 years. Even top prospects got to fight their way in the minor leagues before they get a shot at the majors. And look, frankly, it's hard to hit a baseball consistently. And the amount of guys that fall off, incredible in baseball. That's why there's the draft is so big, right? So, again, I'm saying at the end of the day, choose what he wants to do in his heart. He chose football, and I support him for it. All the intangibles in my eyes line up. I mean, injury is possible, definitely more so than in baseball, but he is a small quarterback. So, I mean, it could be worse if he was a corner, if he was some sort of lineman, etc. So, again, he played well, and I think he'll be able to succeed. I really do, and I hope he does. Another takeaway I had was just overall looking at the quarterbacks here, right, Haskins and some of the other guys, and then looking at the NFL's musical chairs at the quarterback spot, it'll be interesting to see who's making moves in the draft, right? So the Jacksonville Jaguars just traded for Nick Foles. Okay, good. They solved their quarterback problem. Miami Dolphins, Ryan Tannehill, doesn't look like they're sticking on the same page. He may be parting ways in the near future. Denver Broncos picked up Joe Flacco, but let's be honest, Joe Flacco and Case Keenum, do you want either of those guys running your offense? Not particularly, okay? Teddy Bridgewater and Tyrod Taylor are also free agents, so they might get a shot somewhere. Teddy was obviously on the Saints, and he was the backup for the whole year. He didn't get a lot of reps. So, you know, someone might take a chance on him, but he hasn't played in a while, which basically means that the market for quarterbacks is a little small, a lot of moving pieces as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if one of these big-name quarterbacks heads up one of these teams in the near future. Last takeaway here, not a great running back draft. I mean, look, I was watching the combine. Only seven running backs had below 4.5 on the 40-yard dash. That's concerning. And we look at some of the mock drafts, only Alabama's Josh Jacobs is viewed as a potential first-round pick. So you usually see a few, and you usually see some ones that you think can make an impact, whether they're truckers kind of running downfield over the middle and taking contact, or quick, speedy guys to the outside, right, like an Alvin Kamara who was picked up by the Saints in the second round a couple years ago. So maybe a diamond will emerge from the rough. I'm not sure. But when I was watching these guys go at it, I wasn't convinced, to say the least. So we'll see. Switching gears, Tiger Woods announces he will not play in the Arnold Palmer Invitational Open this weekend. Tiger's an 8-time champ there, and he was planning on playing there. However, he is going to be out with an injury, neck strain here, that he says has been bugging him for a little while now. The big cat expects to return for the Players' Championship, which is the week after. What do I take away from this? Is this a serious injury, or is this, as he says, just a neck strain, nothing too big, he's just being cautious? I really think he is being cautious, and in the press release, Woods stated specifically that this is not a long-term injury and there's no back flares or inflammation. So again, he's going out of his way to point out that his back is okay and it is just a neck strain, and it happens to the best of us. Even in golf, I mean, you are bent over looking down at the ball a lot, and it's just one of those things that can be a pain. I've had neck pain before, and I understand. Sometimes you just want to be cautious. You just want to make sure it gets back to being normal. You don't want to stretch it out too much, and you can get cracks in it and whatnot as well. So, again, I think he's just being overly cautious here, and he understands. Look, the API is a pretty good tournament. It's got a status on the PGA Tour, and a lot of guys a lot of big names really like to show up, but I think you want to really be ready for the big tournaments. The Players' Championship, definitely the biggest tournament outside of the majors. It is the Players' Championship in Ponte Verde, Florida. And that's one of those tune-ups for the Masters. That's a really big-name tournament. Draws in a ton of viewers. So I think he's just being cautious. I think he'll be ready. But, I mean, the 43-year-old's not getting younger. So these types of things may start sprouting up a little more often than I think people are accustomed to from Tiger. Even if the fusion surgery worked, and it did, he's played tremendous. Again, you're going to see little nicks and knacks pop up from Tiger and some of the other old guys. You might see Phil miss a few tournaments. He's in his late 40s, right? And so, again, I don't have any serious concerns here. I think the big cat will be back for the Players, and I think he'll really use it as a tune-up for the Masters, which is obviously the most important in April. I'll be in exams during the Masters. I have operations at 7 p.m. on Friday night, so that's a bit of a pain, but I'll watch Saturday and Sunday and then start on my other exams I got a double on the Thursday after that, so that's a little irritating, but we'll see the big cat in action, no doubt about it. As for the Arnold Palmer Invitational, it's still a loaded field. You got the reigning major champions there, Patrick Reed, Francesco Molinari, and Brooks Koepka, all in the race. Koepka, by the way, finished tied for second last week at the Honda Classic. He's been playing well. And you still got some of the top players in the world as well. Justin Rose will be here. Jason Day, Bryson DeChambeau have all been on hot streaks, and they're big names on the PGA Tour. We'll see them there, along with Bubba Watson, 2-time Masters champ, and Hideki Matsuyama, former Players champ. So, again, it's going to be an exciting weekend. I recommend tuning in, but we will not see the big cat. He's just being cautious, he's just being safe, and he's just getting ready for the Players Championship. Folks, that's all I have today. I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for tuning in. Tonight, we have a huge game between the Rockets and the Raptors, two of the top teams in the NBA, primetime, 8 p.m. Eastern start. I'll try and watch it. I have a lot of accounting work to do. We got a big OB project, organizational behavior, on Thursday that I'm going to try and memorize my lines for, and I will. Don't worry about me. And I hope all of you will tune in next Tuesday. Thank you so much for tuning in today. This is The Crunch on the Radio Laurier Network, and I'm your host, Nick LaPenna, signing off for now.